What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in, as always. First things first, follow me on Twitter, at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the board, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, base with two S's. You can follow us as a unit, at Kinda Neat. I just had some kid hit me on Twitter, Ben, who was like, yo, man, can I come be your social media manager? You don't have to pay me. I just need food and board. And I was like, oh, you mean the thing that people in Los Angeles spend 90% of their income on? So you want me to give you a 10% discount on an income so that you can come tweet for me? I'm like, nah, I'm good. YouTube.com/KindaNeat, where you're going to see our guest today, Illmaculate, perform, and everything wrapped up in a pretty package on kindaneat.net. Don't forget to download that podcast app. Search for Kinda Neat and subscribe, because when you do that and then you play the episode from there, sometimes we end up in like the top 50 music podcasts or whatever, and then it's super official, and maybe eventually we'll make money off podcasts. I doubt it, but who knows? With that being said, hi, everybody. Thank you guys for tuning in. What has been happening? Like I told you last week, my grandmother had a spill. She had a fall. And so a while back, like when it happened like a month ago, and my folks made plans, my mom specifically made plans to come down and hang out with her for a while this month. It was her birthday, and it was my grandmother's birthday. And so they came down. So my mom and dad have been up in Ojai. We spent the day that they flew in, hot as shit. Obviously, if you live in the area, I don't know why. I just assume that everyone that listens to the show lives in the area, though I'm sure that's like probably inaccurate. But if you don't know, Los Angeles is going through a heat wave and it's miserable. It's so hot and it's still so hot and it's hot today. And the day that they flew in, it was really hot, and we went to the beach, and my dad was like ecstatic. He fucking loves the beach. Apparently that when they went to Hawaii last year, my mom and dad, like, he wouldn't leave the water. Like, he stayed in the water in Honolulu for like fucking 3 hours at one point. And, which is just crazy. Like, he loves the ocean. And so while we're at the beach, it's cool. Like, when he's happier, he seems to be a little more lucid. So he was kind of like, you know, I just really love this. I could do this every day. He's like, you know, one of those houses right there, pointing at these mansions and fucking these mansion beach houses in Manhattan Beach. Like, I could live in one of those. I could do this every day. Just walk him down the beach. I just love it. And like, that's pretty cool, because a lot of times when he's not in a good mood, he doesn't really string together sentences. He'll just kind of get stuck in his thought and like not be able to think of the word he's trying to say, and so he'll just give up on it. And so, you know, it's nice to hear him string together sentences, even if he is saying the same sentence repeatedly. That's fine. I'd rather hear him like happy and stringing together one happy sentence than be bummed out and not be able to explain why he's bummed out. But the funniest part of that day was we took a walk all the way down from wherever we were over to the pier, and we ended up getting, if you follow me on Instagram, at It's Intuition, shout out. If you follow me on Instagram, you already see this picture, but we ended up under the pier and the light was nice. And so I was like, oh, I should try to get like an Instagram picture here. So I see this fucking homie like playing some soccer with this chick. Like, they're just starting to play some soccer. And I was like, hey, excuse me, will you take this picture for us? He's like, oh, yeah. And he comes over, and I'm like trying to explain the framing to him. And then quickly I realized like he didn't really speak that much English. And so I'm like, I'm just like pointing and like going, oh, you know, like showing him how it looks in the camera. He's like, oh, okay. And so he takes one picture, and I come look at it, and I'm very anal about the photography shit, and I like see it in my head before I take the picture. So I'm like, hey, would you mind taking a few more? Because he didn't really get it. I was like, hey, and I'm like trying to explain to him how to keep it symmetrical and keep everything like, I'm like, really center us, you know? And he's like, oh, okay. And he takes like, he's like, oh, I took a bunch. And I'm like, all right, cool. And so he got it, nailed it. And I'm like, hey, thank you so much. I know I'm a pain in the ass. I appreciate it. And I go shake his hand, and you know, like a big friendly handshake, and I'm kind of like bowing a little bit, going, oh, thank you so much. You know, I don't know why I would bow to him. He was Spanish, not Asian, but whatever. That was a racist, horribly racist joke. Barely a joke at that. But so my dad sees me fucking shaking his hand, and he walks over like kind of laughing and smiles. Hey man, let me get some of that. Like, talking about a handshake, he goes over and shakes the dude's hand. And that was hilarious to me, because that was like it's really funny. Like, we've been to the beach three times since they've been up here, because I went up to Ojai and visited. And I know on these intros it sounds like all I fucking do is go to the beach, but right now it's too fucking hot to not go jump in the water. It's just like miserable anywhere else. And so we'll be walking up and down the beach, and anytime we pass somebody, like, he's my dad's not generally very conversational anymore, but we'll walk past some people and it's almost kind of like I get scared as to what he's gonna say to them. But we'll walk by people and he'll go, "Hey, how you doing? You having a good time?" And like that, which is fucking hilarious, because like that's the most conversational he'll be. And I'm like, where is that coming from? Like, when he's happy and at the water, he'll sit there and say that he could do it all day and that he wouldn't mind living here, and then anybody that passes, he'll go, "How are you? Are you having a good time?" And whenever he sees kids, like particularly like a little baby, he'll go, "Oh, is it a boy or a girl?" Like, he gets very hyped around kids to the point where I'm like, oh man, like sometimes he wants to like automatically play with the kids, but he doesn't comprehend that like he is a giant 6'7" stranger, that, and like perhaps that could be like intimidating to people. So I'm always kind of like trying to shoo him past kids so he doesn't like do too much. But anyway, yeah, so I've been having a good time while my folks are here, and it's nice. It's cool. My dad seems in good spirits when he's in California, so I've been trying to convince my mom to just fucking move him down here. And also, oh yeah, update on my grandmother. She's doing better as well. She seems to be like, you know, the rest has done her well. Her arm is pretty much almost healed. There's still a big ass scab, but the scab seems to be going away. And just even her like mind state seems to be a little better because she's been eating more and resting and sleeping. So it's all good news. All the stuff that sounded all depressing last week is like pretty cool this week. No big deal. Now, today's guest is Illmaculate. He is a rapper, but I guess most people would probably, you say his name and they say, oh, he is a battle rapper. That used to have a stigma to it. I don't think there's so much of a stigma to it anymore, because people are living and making really fucking good, making a good living off of being battle rappers. And Greg's one of those people. Illmac is one of those people. And I just slipped and called him Greg because I've known the dude for about 12 years now. I met him when he was like a 16-year-old kid who was getting flown to California for battle rap events. Even back then, he was shining on fools, and he's still doing that. He's stuck with the battle rap thing, and it's paid off for him in a big way, and he's like pretty widely known. He was just telling me a story about how he was FaceTiming he got plugged in on a FaceTime with Drake while Drake was in with Future or something, and I'm like, oh, that's fucking pretty cool story. Where the world will take you. So yeah, I've known him for a long time, but I didn't know that much about him. We're acquaintances that have known each other forever. We've taken road trips together from, you know, Santa Barbara to San Diego, and we've I'm pretty sure when I lived in Santa Barbara he crashed at my house at least once. But you know, I don't really know that much about the dude's personal life. I just know him as like a rap lover and a good rapper. So anyway, it was cool to sit down and get to know him a little better. And if you are a battle fan listening in to Kind of Neat for the first time, thank you. This isn't necessarily a battle rap podcast, and it's not going to become a battle rap podcast, but I do think that Greg's story has an interesting arc, and we've just known each other for so long that I wanted to have him on. So if you're a battle rap fan, stay tuned in. Listen next week. Go listen to some back episodes. Maybe you'll like it. With that being said, without further ado, here's my conversation with Illmaculate. I've known you for probably almost 15 years, like 12 years probably.
Yeah.
But I don't really know shit about you.
Right.
You are somebody that I would walk across a room to say hello to if I saw you at a bar randomly. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we're not like texting and like updating each other on life.
Yeah.
And so this will be interesting for me because I feel like we already have this false rapport created, but yet and still everything that I learn will be something new that I don't have no idea about.
Yeah.
So
perfect.
So that's good. I don't have to do any like warming you up. I can just be like, so tell me, were you ever molested? No, I'm kidding. Oh shit. No. You're from Portland.
Yes.
Is that like where you are from always, or did you end up moving there as a kid?
No, I was born and raised in St. John's, Portland.
What's
Portland,
St. John's, Oregon? Portland?
It's just like a neighborhood. Neighborhood in Portland.
What is St. John's neighborhood? Like, do you rep it? Do you rep St. John's when you're in Portland?
Yeah. Yes, okay. I do.
And what's it?
It's like northeast, southeast. St. John's is like the north as it gets.
And in the realm of Portlandia, what is St. John's about? What would a St. John's skit be on Portlandia?
Well, now it would be vastly different from like when I grew up, you know, but that's just pretty much the entire city in general. I want to say it was like one of the last thresholds of old Portland, like one of the last remaining, you know, for lack of better words, you know, hoodish type places.
It held up against the gentrification a little bit for a while.
It lasted longer than most places, but it was just, you know.
Right.
So it's kind of isolated. Like,
so St. John's wasn't the most upscale neighborhood when you were growing up?
No.
Okay. Why not?
I don't know. You can get into like socioeconomics and things, but you know, I'm that there is like history with the North in general and the history of Portland. You know, the Northeast and the North in general was more of the, you know, hoodish places, and that goes back through Portland's history.
Yeah, like, wasn't Portland like segregated city initially or something like that?
Yeah, there was like, you know, taking it back, there used to be, it was called Vanport, which is like what we know now is like Hayden Island. It's like where this mall, Jansen Beach, is. You gotta like, it's like the last thing before crossing the bridge into Washington.
Okay.
And you know, early in the history, I can't give dates, you know.
I know a lot
about very little.
I like this kind of shit skimming, though. I'm interested in it, so yeah, go ahead.
So like early, you know, in Portland's history, like early on, like, it was white only, you know, and then it transitioned where it's like, all right, yeah, we'll accept, you know,
minorities,
but you have to stay here. And it was on in this spot called Vanport.
Yeah.
And then over the years, there was like a flood.
Yeah.
And a lot of homes, a lot of lives lost. And at that point was when minorities were allowed to like migrate into Portland from Vanport.
Oh.
And they were only allowed to stay in like the north part of it. Yeah, St. John's and the Northeast pretty much.
Oh, that's interesting. And so that's
like a lot of history that you know, that was
how many generations
like
do you have there?
I want to say at least 2 to 3. I'm not sure if my great grandparents, I think they might have came from somewhere that I don't know.
And
like
I've
the
actually,
Midwest or something,
okay.
Or you know, like Missouri, I think, maybe,
okay.
Or,
okay.
Or something. But you know, my grandma and like my dad definitely grew up in North Portland.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I've always just kind of wondered, you're a racially ambiguous son of a bitch. Like, I have no idea what your like ethnic makeup is.
Yeah.
What are the different sides of the family?
My dad is the white devil.
Okay, so your dad's white. Far,
yeah, right. You know, and that's made up of every European
he's
country.
He's American white, just a mutt.
Yes,
yes,
yeah. You know, Norwegian, Irish, all of it.
Right.
And then my mom is just Native American and Hispanic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's a small...
What sort of
small
Hispanic?
Brown woman that I tower over.
Nice.
Makes me feel, yeah. So.
Really?
Yeah. She claims she's 4'11". I was like 4'9".
Oh, my grandmother's 4'9". That's it. We come from short people.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of Hispanic is she?
And it's something my grandpa used to always say. He was like, you're Mexican.
Oh, okay.
He's like, you know, like his first language was Spanish.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
I thought you were going to say, his first language
there.
Was Mexican. I was like, that's not politically correct, Greg. So you're like half brown and half white, basically.
Right.
That's a great explanation. I never knew that.
Yeah.
I just always thought that I was like, I don't know. He's just like tan. He's tan. He's tannish.
Yeah.
That's cool. And so do you know how the family ended up in Portland from Missouri or from wherever?
I don't actually.
But what does your family do for work? Like, well, how did everybody live?
They had me at a real young age. Like, my mom, I think, was 18 and my dad was 19.
Oh, wow.
And, she finished school, pregnant with me. Maybe I might have been just like born earlier that I think I was actually, she was pregnant with me in her senior year. And then I think I was born.
So they're like high school sweethearts.
Yeah. And then, my dad dropped out and got a job in a aluminum extrusion plant.
Okay.
And he still works there.
Hardworking blue collar folks.
Yeah.
What did mom end up doing?
She bounced around, like she went through a series of jobs and then ended up going back to college, getting a degree. And then, now she works for, our tribe actually.
What? Oh, really?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
tribe is it?
Salettes.
I've never heard of that.
It's a coastal.
Cool.
Coastal tribe.
That's dope.
Yeah.
You guys got any, has the white man given you any casinos?
we have one casino.
How's
in Lincoln
that?
City, Chinook, Queens.
Do you go?
Oh yeah, I go. I pretty much, I think, I get back yearly pretty much what I lose yearly. So I'm even.
Yeah, you break even at the casino.
Yeah.
Being quarter Native American or half Native American, do you get like a stipend from the government shit from that?
Yeah. I get a yearly, piece of like the casino, like, you know, goes out to all members of the tribe.
That's pretty tight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not like pretty tight considering the history of what has happened to the people.
Yeah.
But
right.
in modern time, not so bad.
Yeah.
So growing up in Portland, what's that like?
I mean, it was all I knew. You know, there was never like, when you're like growing up and when you're in that, it's when it's all you know, you're not like, this is this type of life.
It was the worst question. But now that you're well traveled, now that you've been around and stuff, like what are the things that you would say in your youth were unique to your growing up?
Looking back, I think it was. You know, Portland's an interesting place in that, you know, like how I broke down, you know, the way the neighborhoods were, at least in the North and Northeast, like throughout the 80s and 90s. You had that element, but you also have the like greater Portland, you know, what has developed now in the like, you know, liberal, green, like, you know,
organic, fucking whatever.
So there was all those elements already. And then also it's a pretty artsy city, you know, like art is a big thing from the music scene. Not necessarily hip hop, but just rock and everything. There's like a huge indie scene out there, you know? I was out on tour in Europe and I was in, where was I? I was in Aalborg, Copenhagen, and we're doing a show. This is just, you know, a testament to what I was just saying. And the promoter was like, oh, you're from Portland. And I was like, yeah. He goes, yeah, like I can pull out the receipts of all my last payouts the last 3 months. And he goes, and over half of them, the bands were from Portland.
Really?
Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of working musicians out there right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that element combined with like what was specific to St. John's. And even in St. John's too, there was always kind of like this, I think, like underdog kind of notion or feeling from the sports teams, when the schools I grew up in, but also, like I said, like geographically, St. John's is a little detached from the rest of Portland. It's the most north, but it's also like west.
Uh-huh.
You know, once past St. John's, you're crossing a bridge and it's like you're on your way to the coast.
Right.
You know?
So you're pretty close to the water?
I mean, there's the Willamette River that St. John's sits on.
Okay.
But it's just detached from the greater Portland area by a few minutes.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So there was always this like underdog, like our teams going against the, you know, Roosevelt versus Jefferson. And
there
was always like this rivalry and kind of like St. John's is Portland. Like, you know, so I think those elements, but from the music influence and like the artsy aspect to just the neighborhood dynamic. And then that kind of underdog effect had like a, you know,
did you
looking back an effect on my whole
did you
trajectory.
Grow up pretty artsy?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Like are your folks artistic at all?
My mom definitely sings, you know, and that was an influence. So she'd always sing in the car. I remember we took a trip to California and in San Francisco, she stopped at one of those booths and like recorded a song. Like, and I remember, and she got like a tape from it.
Yeah.
And actually, I remember that being that I had to be like under 10. I wasn't double digits. And I remember at that point, it was like a real influential thing. I was like, that's
you're like mom spitting hot fire in the booth.
Yeah, I was like, I want in.
Yeah. No, that's crazy how she did the whole every word from Juicy by Biggie on that tape. That's like crazy that she knew all the words to that.
It was actually La Isla Bonita by Madonna, for your information.
Wow. Hey, so mom's a little bit of a your folks stuck together?
No, they when actually, when I was 3 years old.
Oh, so you don't even remember that probably, huh?
I remember.
You do?
I have memories of it for sure.
Ooh,
I remember,
really?
Like, I actually remember the fight and the split and everything.
Really? Yeah. How do you remember that? You're so young.
I think a pivotal.
Do you have like a weird memory thing? Like, can you remember everything?
No, not at all. But I think that was just like a pivotal memory in my history that impacted me.
Were you only child, or did they have any more before they split up?
No, I was only child at the time.
Yeah.
They split up and they both have had children since.
Who did you end up going with, mom or dad?
It was kind of back and forth, when I was, up until starting school. And then when I started school, I was staying with my dad.
Really?
Yeah, my grandma. He was staying with his mom. And it was like a crazy house because my four uncles lived there too.
So it was a lot of male influence.
Yeah.
And why didn't you go with mom? Do you remember, I feel like most kids go with their mom.
I think it was just a thing that they decided at the time, and also I think the school, like my grandma lived like six blocks from this school that my dad went to and everything, and it was like in the north, so I think.
Did you still see her a lot though?
She
was there all the time.
And
they kept it cool after they split up, or did you see a lot of turmoil between them, or what?
There wasn't a lot of time. They got along. There was never really an impact on me as far as, of course, when I was real young, I had the fairy tale. I just want my parents to get back together.
Of course.
But even when I started, becoming aware of relationships and going, having girlfriends of my own, I realized that would never work. I don't know how they lasted as long as they did. They're both the dominant personality.
So they both get remarried.
Yeah.
But when was that? Or when is that story?
Around, I can't remember marriage, but the people that they got with, my stepdad, my stepmom, been around since I was five.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And so you got siblings from both families?
Yeah.
How many?
I have two sisters, on my dad's side, and one brother on my mom's.
Word. How's that?
Yeah. I mean, I love them.
Yeah.
It was interesting because when I, growing up with my dad, it was a full house, and we always had other family members that were living with us. It was three of us and,
four uncles and you and your grandmother.
Yeah.
Damn. That sounds like an Italian family, low key. Yeah. That's crazy.
My uncle is 13 years older than me. So he was young in high school.
So that's
your influence on
your brother uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My brunkle.
Yeah. Right.
So, he'd always treat me like a little, and he was the youngest, getting picked on by four older brothers. So I got picked on by him.
Wow. That does make sense. Cause it's your dad's probably only 21, 22 when that's going on. Damn, that's such a trip. Here's the thing. When I met you, you're 16, 17, but already very advanced rapper and getting paid to travel places and such. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine, and just hearing you speak right now, you're very well spoken, and you watch your battle raps and you can tell that you think a lot. Mm-hmm. So school came easy, or what, how was it?
Yeah. I was very engaged, and I had a few influential teachers that like when I was in elementary school, fourth and fifth grade, I was in the chess club.
Really?
And loved that. Yeah. And that was my favorite teacher, who also taught the chess club.
The Jizzer from Wu-Tang Clan?
Yeah. That was his alias.
So crazy. Yeah.
And it came pretty easy, and then even through middle school, high school, it was easy, but it is an application thing, So when I'd get my midterms or any of my report cards, it broke down the different facets of, in class participation, behavior, whatever else. And it was definitely in class participation, 80%. And then it was homework, 0%. Testing, 98%.
There's a fine line between things coming too easy or coming easy and being too easy, because then you get bored and you don't give a shit.
Yeah, I definitely had the young, arrogant attitude of I already know this. Why am I just homework is
Did
pointless.
You do a lot of of reading on your own when you were a kid?
When I was real young, like, my mom used to read to me, and then I read to her, like, every night, and then, you know, so I love books. And then when I remember going into like high school and everything, it was kind of the transition into like, you know, I'd say probably hitting puberty is like, I hate reading, you know, right. Like this. I'm cool.
Like, I just want to jerk off all the time. That's what happens. Yeah. I don't look at Playboy for the articles anymore. Only the pictures.
I blame it on something about Mary, that movie. I didn't know how to properly masturbate until watching that movie. True story. But
I don't want to know. Story. I don't want to know that one. No,
let's talk about that.
So when. In your school, like St. John's is a little bit split off from Portland. Yeah. Like, okay, Portland's not like a huge city, right?
Yeah, you can get everywhere in like 20, one side of the other.
Right, and I would imagine 20. There's maybe like, how many high schools would you say there are around there? Like 20, 25?
So
I would imagine that every high school has its little, or every school section has its little niche. Like, this is the rich kid school. This is the country school. This is the whatever school. Mm-hmm. What was the stereotype about your school?
In high school?
Yeah, sure.
I would say more of the kind of like Mighty Ducks, like the like region, like
small,
the bro that yeah. it was like just as big, but as like any of the other high schools, but it was kind of like there was no real success in sports, the, you know, academically behind most. And it, we had a rivalry with the other high school that was in the Northeast, which was like, you know, the other quote unquote like hoodish school or whatever.
Where did you fit into the equation of your high school? Like, what, like, if you were to break it down into the stereotypical the social dichotomy,
who did you
hang with?
I kicked it pretty solid. I was pretty solitary in that I had, like, especially into high school, I was cool with pretty much a lot of the groups. And so, like, in classes, I had friends from every gamut, you know, in every group. As far as who I kicked it with outside of school, it was like my friend Warren Cross.
Yeah.
And like my girlfriend at the time, like my high school girlfriend. Other than that, I had a lot of, friend/acquaintances, but as far as groups, I was kind of like me or the people I like made music with, or Warren, and I don't know, like, it was kind of like social chameleon, I guess I could say, I wasn't like really good friends with pretty much any of the groups, but I got along with most of them.
Right. Yeah. You know, the funny thing is a lot of times in these interviews, I try to like stay away from too much talk about the music life. But the thing is like, I would say that you've probably spent 3/4 of your life making music at this point, because even when I would talk to you when you were 16, you were like, oh yeah, I've been making music since I was 10. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, it's 11, but yeah.
Oh, 11. There you go. Yeah. So tell me about that. Like, how does a little half Native American, half white kid from Portland like start barring out?
In middle school, you know, I definitely kicked it with the group like where I was like the token white boy at George Middle School. And I was like, my best friend at the time was my homeboy Deshante. And we were always kicking in. He always rapped. I didn't rap at the time, but we always would like roast each other back and forth always. And, you know, I was definitely had been a long time hip hop fan since a very young age.
How? Like, who got you into that? Was your dad, were your older brother, or, I mean, your uncles into that?
My uncle was. Yeah. He definitely was watching MTV all the time and had, you know, Tupac albums he actually had a pretty eclectic taste in music, but it was definitely very hip hop driven.
Yeah.
But if you were to ask who put you in that direction initially,
Deshante?
I'd say my grandma.
Really?
Yeah, my grandma LaDonna when I was 4 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
How's that work?
She
was like, oh, here, check out this 2 Live Crew tape.
You're
like,
what?
You're like, grandma, you listen to me so horny? What the fuck?
Nah, she had got like a, this is like when Walkmans, and she had a Walkman.
Yeah.
And she went to like a yard sale and got a cassette like case to carry all her cassettes in, but it came preloaded with the tons of cassette tapes. And one of them was called Jammin'. It was like a mixtape, and it had like like Run DMC, Curtis Blow, Roxanne, Sugar Hill Gang, Fat Boys. It had everything, all the classic old school shit on. And at this time, it's like 1990.
Yeah.
So that even that's a little, you know, like little back in the past. But to me, it was like the first time. So she gave me that tape.
Right.
And my mom stayed with her. So every time I was with my mom, I was there and I'd always ask her to use her Walkman and I'd just listen to that tape. And that was like my tape.
That's tight.
You know? That's like Run DMC, like You Talk Too Much was like my favorite song, you know? And so from then on, I definitely had a love and passion for the music.
That's dope.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting. I have a similar story that I don't think I've ever told on here before, but like my dad was the type. I feel like if my dad would have been born in our generation, he would be like amazing at the internet, because back in the day he would go to the library constantly and you could check out music from the library and you could take a tape player in there and fucking take a tape and dub it in the library, and they didn't give a shit. Like that, it was like early Napster shit. That's what he would do. And so he would see me like as a young kid being into like, you know, MC Hammer or Vanilla Ice, and he knew that shit was corny and he didn't like rap music, but he knew that particularly the rap that I was listening to was corny. So he would go dub like LL Cool J tapes or Run DMC tapes or Beastie Boys tapes for me and then give them to me. And I remember getting roasted one time actually in fifth grade because I had a fucking Sony My First Walkman. Mm-hmm. Remember those? They were like red and they looked like a toy basically.
No, I don't remember.
They were some straight bullshit, but it was like a big advertising thing like, oh, My First Walkman. And it was like, looked like a red toy basically. And I put it on and then he gave me an LL Cool J tape that I was listening to, but it wasn't Mama Said Knock You Out, which was like the one that was out then. Yeah. It was the one before that, maybe Bad or something. And so my friends were like, oh man, you got a fucking My First Walkman. And they're clowning and they're like, what are you listening to? And I said, LL Cool J. And they're like, which one? I told now. And they're like, damn fool, you got a My First Sony and a my first rap tape. And I was like, oh shit, but whatever, shit was right. Influential.
Yeah
That's crazy. So your grandmother accidentally made you a rapper.
Yeah, pretty
that's
much
that's tight. And so when you're kicking it with Deshante and roasting each other, you guys start rapping together too. Is it mostly freestyle?
No oddly enough, like, you know, me and him like kicked it a lot and we're like best friends. And then of course there was a group of friends we kicked it with. And so we were always kind of like roasting each other, you know, and I grew up like my dad and all my uncles used to just roast, you know, So I already like, you know, had a, like a little affinity that, however, I didn't, start. I didn't like most people start by freestyling, just having fun. That wasn't me. Deshante was like, you should write a rhyme.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, I'm not a rapper. He's like, you should just write a rhyme.
Yeah.
And so I wrote my first rhyme, but I definitely just bit Rakim and like added two bars, you know, like and it was like a 4-bar rhyme and like 2 bars were biting Rakim or something, like a tape I had.
It could have been worse people. Not, it was right? good taste.
Yeah. So, I remember that the lyrics actually is like, I reach into this is the biting part.
Yeah.
I reach into my pocket, but there's nothing but lint. I try to figure how I could get some dead presidents. So I walk into the bank with a 9 in my hand. Next thing I know, the judge is saying, approach the stand. And that's 11-year-old me, you know, like talking about robbing banks with a 9 in my hand.
Yeah, right,
but it was
right.
Just like, you know, what I was listening to. Was
right.
So from then on, it was like once I wrote that, like all through school, reading and writing was my favorite because this is before high school when I was like, I'm too cool to read.
Right.
But up until like English, reading, writing, those were all my favorite subjects. I loved writing stories. That was my favorite thing I still have stories that I wrote, you know, all through school. And so once I wrote that, it was like combining that with the music that I love the most. And I was just like, I couldn't stop. You
right.
know? So that was where it started. Like my first rap group came that year, later that year.
Which was called? What was it called?
It's called Lyrical Militia.
Fuck yeah.
Right?
Fuck yeah. Well,
that's like the quintessential first rap group.
Well, you know, one thing that I like about you and I is that neither of us gave up on our like real backpacker ass names, because we both have some like very late 90s, early 2000 rap names.
Yeah.
And while everyone else has changed them or tried to deviate from them, we just kept with it.
Yeah.
We were like Immaculate and Intuition.
Yeah.
Backpacker ass names. I'm good.
It's true.
You know what
Most
I mean?
People just mispronounce it Illmatic anyway. Anyway,
right,
so I
right.
just roll with it.
Right. Like, I feel like most people at this point would have been like, okay, I'm going to try to like rebrand. I'm just going to go buy Ill, or like, I'm going to go by Mac, you know, and like, nope.
I was thinking about changing it to Mac hyphen Row.
That'd be
Mac Row.
Mac Row. Yeah. There you go. Maybe you could have gone by iMac. That would have, I don't know.
But iMack.
Yeah,
like
there
dash
you go.
M-I-C-K.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Lyrical Militia, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm, that's real late 90s shit
right
there.
Yeah, I went
there.
From Lyrical Militia to Sound Gods.
Sound Gods, that sounds like it could have been like an early like
Sound Click
beat sharing website.
Yeah, exactly, it does for sure.
Yeah, so what did you do in your free time, like in as a kid? Like, it seems as though were you just like in the studio, or what were you doing? Did you play sports?
From like what?
I don't know.
I definitely, you know, from sixth grade, you know, through high school, even, you know, to this day, like, play basketball.
Oh.
Taught, you know, my sisters how to
like
play.
Like a Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a short joke.
Oh, I thought it was just comparing raw talent.
Yeah.
But Space Jam. classic movie.
So you're a basketball player.
Yeah, I play basketball.
Yeah.
But really, even, like, through, oddly enough, through you know, elementary school, before even music came, I was kind of, I wouldn't say antisocial, but I didn't really hang out with kids much. And I think that has to do with, in retrospect, obviously not at the time, I was this self-aware, but in retrospect, I think it has to do with having older uncles and hanging out with them constantly. I felt like I just wanted to hang out with them and, you know,
they have more issues to offer than little kids.
I don't think it's stimulated by hanging out. I mean, obviously I went to birthday party and had, you know, hung out with friends, but overall I didn't really hang out with many people in elementary. Even through middle school, I started to be a little bit more social and like had my best friend, but you know, looking back, I was like, man, I was kind of a little loner, like antisocial. Okay, I didn't want to kick it with friends. I wanted to come home and kick it with my uncles and like my uncle Danny and like listen to all his tapes, and he had a crazy system in his room, and you know, so music was heavily influenced even from then on. Then when you would get into middle school, you know, obviously you start like partying and you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I'm playing basketball and partying a little more or whatever. And through high school, still, I kept a very small circle, and like we'd go to shows, but music was really prevalent for me even at a very young age.
What
like,
shows
I just wanted
did you
to be
go
in the
to?
Studio. My first hip hop show, I think, was Tech N9ne, like right before Absolute Power dropped, like in between Angelic and Absolute Power, as far as like a, you know, official show. I went to like local, like talent shows and stuff that I'd performed at, but that was like my first.
What was your first time rapping on stage? How old were you?
I think my first is like a talent show in like middle school, you know, like 7th grade or something, was my first time.
And you rapped your own bars?
Yeah.
How did you do?
I'm sure it was terrible,
right?
But at the time, like we felt like, I was like, I'm the man.
That was
like,
a Lyrical Militia?
Yeah.
How many dudes were in their crew?
Well, it like fluctuated. I think originally our first performance, I think there was four of us. Me, Reggie, DeShante, and Ronte.
Yeah, DeShante and Ronte?
Yeah. I think that was actually our first show.
Yeah.
And then it kind of expanded and contracted like for a couple years.
Yeah.
After that.
So by the time I met you, it was in Santa Barbara, and it was because of Philip Drummond, DJ Philip Drummond, Elliot, shout out Elliot. Like, how does he find out about you? Here's the thing. That guy, I feel like Elliot, actually, a catalyst for a lot. He's like an uncredited catalyst for a lot of what's happened in modern battle rapping. I think a lot of relationships can be traced back and funneled right to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the Christopher Columbus.
He was like a fucking amazing. As many differences as we had, he was an amazing battle rap A&R.
Yeah.
And he like spotted talent in you very young. Cause like I said, he started hitting you up when you were like 16, I think. Right.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And he starts flying you places.
Right.
What's that like?
I think so. Starting at the first part, I think he, caught wind of me when I was 15 in 2001. I'm gonna try to like summarize this because it's usually a long story. But
we can go. Hey, you got time? We got long story. I don't care.
Okay, 15 years old. Yeah, my first battle. So prior to this, I hadn't freestyled. Like I said, I started off writing, and then I had been writing for about 4 years up until this point, and making music. And I've been in the studio about two. I started recording when I was like 13. Mm-hmm. We finally got like a studio, and we're constantly recording as Lyrical Militia and making demos. And my
you guys trying to be like the Raucous Records version of Lil Bow Wow or something? Like
I don't even think Lil Bow Wow. Like there was this other group that was like
Quo?
It was something to do with a number. It was like, you know, something seven, like or you know, it wasn't Furious Five, but it was something like that. And I want to say it was with seven, and there was hella little kids. Seven little kids.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, copping their single at Tower Records or something.
Yeah.
But like, oh, because we already were a group.
Do you ever remember that little kid group Quo? It was two kids, a white kid and a black kid. The white kid went on to be like Britney Spears' choreographer and shit as an adult, but they were like pretty dope rappers for little kids, and I used to like be like, oh man, I want to be
really
like, Quo, this shit's tight.
That's tight. No, I don't remember.
It's probably horrible in retrospect.
Right.
Okay, so you're in the studio at 13, and then
I'm making music and around I'd say end of 14, early 15, like prior to this, I just listened to what was pop, you know, MTV, but like my CD collection at this point probably consists of like It's Dark and Hell Is, like DMX, Method Man, Tupac, Biggie, you know, and a lot of other Wu-Tang, but, that was like my threshold. Then I got introduced to cannabis.
Oh shit.
My mind
was blown.
So
many battle rappers.
My
like,
mind was blown.
Drug, like intro drug.
Yeah. Because I think what it was is it was just something that was so different, and it like blew my mind. And I actually started at 2000 BC. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't, and then I went back and heard his first, but my mind was blown. And at this time I'm in high school, we're having silent sustained reading, and I'm reading the dictionary already because I'm just writing words down because I wanted all these big words. It's just I want to increase my word bank, you know, like words. Oh, auxiliary. I never use that word. I need to use it more, and like rhymes, whatever. So anyways, I get into this cannabis phase and I just start writing like cannabis, you know, like super just. Yo, my cerebral cortex is enormous. And start even talking with more of the, or rapping with the East Coast.
I'm a cannibal with mechanical mandibles.
Yeah. And, my buddy who was in Lyrical Militia, my dude, Austin Ripley, he was like, hey, I have this flyer, and he gives it to me, and it's for a battle.
Yeah.
And it was like all hip hop. It was like a DJ battle, a breakdance battle, graffiti expo, and an MC battle. He's like, you should enter this. You're like on some battle rhymes, battle rhyme shit already. And I was like, I don't freestyle. Like, this is a freestyle battle. And he was like, learn. He's like, just start freestyling. It was about a month and a half before the event. And it was $1,000 prize for the MC battle.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right. And so I just start freestyling. I start battling people randomly at school. And I take all those words that I was like previously, I'll just write words down to use in rhymes. And I started like trying to just look at pieces of paper and use the words in freestyle. I go to the battle, which funny enough, I guess Awkwards was there. This is years before we actually met.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a big event and it was in Portland. I'm 15 years old.
Yeah.
2001, November 2001. And it was one of those situations where I told all my friends and family
to show
do
up.
Do not come.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I told everyone, do not come.
Yeah.
I'm like, I am going to get washed.
Yeah.
And I just have to take this to the head just to get better.
Right.
You know, don't come. I told everyone I know, don't come.
Yeah.
And then, so it was like a crazy process. I'm pretty sure there's like 180 contestants. I remember it was almost 200, and the like 180, 181, something in there is always stuck in my head. And so there was this huge line on the side, and what they had was
in Portland, the 180 battle rappers showed up.
It was sold out, 2,000 capacity venue.
Holy shit!
Yeah,
it's
like the Crystal Ballroom.
Wow, that's crazy.
It was huge, and so there's all these MCs, and you just stood in line. You filled out a little 3x5 card with your name on it. You know, like they're like, all right, put your alias, where you're from, whatever. And so I go up And I'm not gonna lie, I like had some pre-med bars for my intro, which I remember I was always ashamed to admit that afterwards.
Right, of course.
But it was just for like the 30-second little, because everyone just went up and just rapped, and then they narrowed it down to like 16 or something. I don't even think they did 32.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was to 16 from 180, and it was all based off your little 30-second thing. So I went up there and I actually got a huge reaction, and so I leave the stage and like everyone's like, oh, you know, just really because I'm 15 and I'm me. So
like,
I look
like
just the smallest kid.
Can you believe
there.
That 15-year-old has a mechanical mandible?
Yeah. And like, you know, everyone else is like, you know, adults, like,
right.
You know, and
everyone else is struggle rappers and you're the adorable.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. So I'm like getting all this love going through the crowd. I'm like, this is crazy. And then
you were the slim Jesus of Portland at the time.
I wouldn't ever I don't think I could fit in those shoes. Funny enough, you know, when I filled out my card, they're like, put your alias where you're from. So I put like alias colon Immaculate, and then, you know, where I was from and everything. So then when they're calling the final 16 up, they're like, they kept calling someone like alias report to the stage.
Oh,
alias
shit.
and so I didn't get called up, and like I'm standing in the front row though, and there are like in the front couple rows, and everyone's like, why didn't you get called up? Like, you killed it, like you blew the roof off. I'm like, I don't know. And I remember being super salty, and they kept on calling someone named Alias. And then like a few rounds into the battle, or a few battles in, it was still like the first round, they like looked at me, they seen me in the front row, and they're like, Alias, like, why aren't you up on stage?
Yeah.
Because I put like Alias first and not just still. So then they pull me up, I go through the battle, and long story short, like, I pretty much accidentally won. Like, I won the whole thing. And you know, that was kind of the catalyst, I think, for even Philip Drummond knowing about me, because that's like a big event, especially.
Did people tape it?
Yeah, there's VHSs.
That's the
I think it just got uploaded on YouTube this last year.
That's so
someone
crazy.
Put that up.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like the battle culture as a whole has obviously turned into this big content churning fucking entity where there's like multiple new battles hitting YouTube every single day.
Right.
But back when I met you, all there was mcbattles.com, and you had
to
basically updated every day in hopes, or like you would refresh it every day in hopes that there was one battle a month.
Even if it was audio.
Right. Audio battle.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Used to
and
watch.
The videos were usually only about a minute and a half long. Mm-hmm. They were like maybe one of the rounds, or if the camera guy didn't like one of the rappers, he would cut out that round or whatever. Yeah. Like,
it's like Pac FM, Tone Deaf, and Gin and Mini Styles.
It was the
idea.
It was the internet equivalent of like taping the radio when you heard your favorite song. It was like that.
It really,
you know what
was.
I mean? Like, you didn't really have access to a lot of battles back then.
That was like my site, though. That was that was a big influence. For
and
sure.
So dudes like Elliot and dudes like Avocado, like they would be looking at those sites and looking for talent all the time. And so is that like how did Elliot hear about you from the Portland battle?
So I'm not sure where, you know, that leaked. That battle was like a big event. Like I said, there's so many people there. And, you know, me and Awkward's becoming friends later on.
Yeah.
He was like, I was there.
Yeah.
Like,
did he make it to the final 16 or no?
I don't think he did, honestly. Ooh. I don't even. No, I'm pretty
Shots
sure
fired.
He did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Brian.
He's coming for you, Brian.
Yeah. No, I don't think he did. But so that was the catalyst, and that's where I'm pretty sure there were like, I did a couple car shows after that, took second at another. And, It was real. All of a sudden, you know, I didn't. It was really crazy because it just like fell into this thing where all of a sudden the whole city was like, oh, and there was like controversy. He only won because he was young. Which when I won that first battle, and you know that was really what fueled me to. Because who knows if I would have kept with it, but there was all this controversy of like he won because he was young, and so that really competitive.
That was
already.
A thing that followed you for years too, because like when the Scribble Jam thing, that was like a big thing. Like, oh, he only won because he's the underdog.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. And like, There's always something to be said for the underdog shit, but if you don't take advantage of that momentum, then what's the point?
Right, you know what I mean? Right, yeah. It's all about utilizing your strength.
Right. So when do you start traveling out of state for battle stuff?
A year later, I was 16. I did that battle. I did a couple car shows in Portland, took like first and second, and somewhere in there in those like three or four battles, you know, Elliot had Philip Drummond had heard of me somehow. Who knows? Honestly, right. Still have no idea.
Right.
And then he contacted me like, hey, come out to these battles.
Like what, on MySpace or something?
You know, it probably was MySpace. Yeah. He probably messaged me and then got my email and then was like, hey, come out to California. There's a Santa Barbara battle. And I think a few days later, there was a battle in LA and I came out for like two of them. And the one in Santa Barbara.
Might have been San Diego.
Oh, the Hot Monkey. So
that was later.
Maybe. Maybe it might have been San Diego. I know I came out a few times.
I remember the first time you came down was definitely for Santa Barbara.
Right.
And because we were at a party in Isla Vista, and that's where I met you. And, and Elliot Hollis, oh man, you got me. This is fucking the best battle rap. He's only 16. And I'm like, oh, cool, you know? Yeah. And I don't know. That was just so crazy. And so, how did you do in that battle?
Santa Barbara. Actually, I did pretty well. Here was my thing. Like at the time, we're talking about MC battles, like that was the only place to consume battle rap. So at this time, I looked up to the Fresh Coast. I never met him. I looked up to Franco, watching the Iron Man battles in that gym, you know, where he battled No Can Do, a bunch of other, I think Cypher 1 or something. Yeah. XI. I watched that.
Arukasaki?
I watched that at least... I would say at least 100 times.
Yeah, totally.
You know? And No Can Do, same thing. A few of his battles on there, which at the time was a ton of content. And I definitely met Bo Rat somewhere in there. I had heard of him. So then comes Santa Barbara. I think I battled... someone who I can't remember. First round one
wasn't the one that I was hosting, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that was the first battle you did in Santa Barbara?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was like the second
at the college.
Okay, so I was hosting that. Yeah, Elliot got me to host that. And it's funny because the lady who was like the president of the board or whatever of like student activities, it was a situation where there was like, you know, 32 rappers or something. And she just wanted to draw names out of a hat to pair people up. And I was going, look, lady, you can't do that. There's some of the best battle rappers in the country have flown here for this. Like, this is like kind of all of a sudden a big centralized event where there are people that have traveled from hours away to be in this. I was like, we can't put some shitty no name that's like just a local college student against some dude that's traveled and that's good and known. Like, we have to seed them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's like, we can't do that because then the event is rigged. And I was like, the event is not rigged if you do. And so anyways, we ended up drawing names out of the hat. And then at the last minute, Elliot and I like changed all the brackets so that nobody that was good would get eliminated in the first round.
Early, right?
Yeah.
I definitely got, you know, probably a college student or something first round.
Yeah.
And then second round, I came up against No Can Do.
Yeah.
Which I had never met. But at the time was like, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm battling No Can Do. I've seen him 1,000 times. I'm like, all right, just have a good showing. And then I ended up winning against him. And I remember at that point, I'm like, I've won. I won the event. In my head, I'm like, I beat someone that I've watched for this. I'm like, I've made it, you know?
Right.
And then, I think I battled 60 Cycle after that.
Oh yeah.
Maybe I'm reversing that order, but I battled 60 Cycle.
Right.
And then, I made it to the semifinals where I lost to Bo Rat.
Right. Bo Rat ended up winning that because he was a UCLA student and kind of had that kind of home field advantage momentum.
He was killing it too, though. He was killing. I think he there's definitely a deserved win. He outpunched me, definitely beat me. He was funny. I think I was running out of steam at that point.
That's funny. And I remember being so hyped because some of that footage ended up on MC Battles. I'm like, there I am hosting.
Yeah.
And you know,
Franco like picking up skateboards and cups and bottles.
Here's a great story about that. I don't know if you know this, but my DJ, Leon, well, not my, Leon, who used to DJ for me during my shows, DJ Merge, he was DJing that battle. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to say any names, but somebody paid him to make sure that Franco, who could double time freestyle, freestyle over double time, paid him a little extra to make sure that in one of Franco's rounds, a double time beat would come up.
J-Pro?
It was against J-Pro.
Yeah, it was against
J-Pro. Shout out J-Pro. Yeah. And so he got paid to do that. And, because I remember as soon as he drops the beat, you could see on the video, I go, what the fuck? I'm like, why are you dropping a double time beat?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Vividly.
And
yeah.
Franco starts killing it. And then J-Pro is like lost like, over yeah, the like beat, what? But is like angrier because of that and comes off and fucking ends up winning that battle, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah. I was like, oh, that shit fucking backfired for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then I remember we ended up traveling. So we ended up driving in my Blazer. I think I had a Blazer back then. Me, you, Bo Rat, and somebody else from Santa Barbara to San Diego.
Okay, then for Hot Monkey. Love Cafe.
I don't know if it was that same trip, though. It might have been a different trip, but there was a 2-on-2 battle, and you and Bo Rat teamed up.
Yeah, yeah. So that was definitely like in 03, I want to say. Yeah. Maybe 02. It was 02, 03.
It was 03 at least. Yeah,
because I had already met, basically where I met Bo Rat initially, so this might even been before Santa Barbara, was Brainstorm.
Oh, right. In
so
Seattle?
That's okay. Yeah. Brainstorm. That's where I met Bo Rat. And then we kept in contact. And when I came to SD, we hung out. I mean, Santa Barbara, we hung out for the battle we just talked about. But yeah, I had met him in Seattle at Brainstorm. And that's where we were kicking and deciphering and everything. And, you know, we had a good relationship. So when the 2-on-2 at the Hot Monkey Love Cafe, came about, I think it might have been in that same trip, as what we're talking about. But regardless, that was where we were like, hey, let's team up. And that was actually the first 2-on-2 I did, was with him. And, the like overall favorite was Awkward's and No Can. Everyone's speculating was like they're gonna win, and then there was Kale and someone team
joint
up.
Custody ended up winning though.
No,
yeah, not, they did.
No,
oh,
not that one.
Really,
me and Bo Rat won that.
Oh,
Joint Custody won. They won at the Mind Games, and they beat me and Thesaurus in the second round or something.
Okay, no, the last round was you and Joint Custody. I think Joint Custody beat Awkward's and No Can.
No, we you beat did. Awkward's and No Can, and I think the semis. I forgot who they battled, but we battled them and we beat them there.
I was teamed up with 60 Cycle Hum in that battle, and we beat some local San Diego dudes like real bad, and then we went up against No Can and Awkward's, and I thought they were only did one. We only got to do one round, and. I thought that the crowd was chanting one more round. I was like, oh, we got this. Mm-hmm. And then the judges were like, no, Awkward's and No Can. Uh-huh. And somebody filmed it. I don't know who. And then Avocado uploaded it long before I met him. Uh-huh. And he uploaded it as No Can doing Awkward's versus two faggots. I swear to God, because he didn't know who we were.
That's how
we uploaded. So for a long time, that was living on the internet as No Can Do and Awkward's versus two faggots. And I was like, wow, Kyle, that's fucked up. Yeah, how funny is that?
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I remember like driving home from that battle and me, you, and Bo Rat all like putting on instrumentals and rapping to each other. And I was like playing you guys music from my first album that had come out and shit. It's so funny. Yeah, it was fun times, man. Rap was very innocent for all of us back then.
Yeah, it was just passion. It was nothing but like,
and then soon thereafter, this was when Scribble Jam was like a big fucking deal. Like, I like in context, like back then, that I looked up to like Scribble Jam champions as like, it was like if you won that, you made it. Like you were like guaranteed to have a career, and like those are like some of the most influential rappers at the time for me.
5 years before that, I was watching Scribble Jam every year.
Yeah.
I'd go to 360 Vinyl, which was like the only place in Portland that I knew of that you know, they was like that vinyl. It's like that vinyl store that sold graffiti tips, and it sold Scribble DVDs, you know, and I would go there and I'd get Scribble Jam from when it was a VHS, you know, I think like 99. maybe it's 2000, I copped like prior years, like from 99 on. And then every year I would go and get it. Like I'd pre-order it, or I'd pre-order it with the store and go get it every year.
Yeah.
And I watched it religiously, you know, from was like 01 when Mac Lethal and Dose. Maybe that was 01 or 02. And then 03 with Swan and Rhymefest. And 2000, every year. And yeah. that, well, that I remember. Same thing.
It was such
like Scribble Jam parties.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, really?
Me and all my friends would like That's party so and just watch the new DVD. Who's got the new DVD?
Yeah.
All right, we're meeting at Joel's at, you know, this Friday, and well, everyone bring and, drink. And
right. And Santa Barbara became kind of this like hub for people from all over California would come and meet in the middle. Like the people from the Bay and the people from LA would all come mm-hmm. to Santa Barbara because of Elliot and because of our, like me and Mark's house, and everybody would record various places, and Franco would crash at Elliot's house and all this shit. But I remember like whenever like customer service would come up and like 10 fucking dudes would be at our crib, and somebody would always bring the new Scribble Jam DVD yeah. and be like, oh, watch this guy's bars. And guaranteed somebody always had every battle memorized and shit.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, the, I guess what I'm saying is like at that time, just meeting people that had been in Scribble Jam, I would look at them a little different. Like, oh damn, that fool is in Scribble Jam. Like, yeah. I can't believe he did
that.
Was
like that. When I met Awkward.
Yeah, because not only did it show a certain amount of skill, but it also showed a great amount of dedication to like fly out and put that much faith in yourself to go to Cincinnati. Yeah. And so anyway, in 2004, we all go out there, right? I went out.
It's like
there.
One of the strongest showings for the Fresh Coast in general. I swear.
Everybody flew out from California, mm-hmm. and I went just to hang out and try to like slang CDs and meet people mm-hmm. and take pictures and stuff. And you were in it, Awkward was in it, maybe No Can didn't show up that year, but I mean, who else? Like Bo Rat was there.
Yeah, Bo Rat, Franco, even people who weren't battling, it was like a strong Fresh Coast presence.
Yeah.
You know, Lush was there.
Oh, right.
And it was like we went out there as a team, just from like the rapport building.
And we all were staying at that shitty fucking hotel.
Budget host.
Yeah. And that was like a crack house hotel kind of.
Yeah, but it was perfect because no one called the cops and we just partied.
Right.
And windows being broke and syringes in the bed. And
yeah, it was disgusting.
AIDS in the pool. But it was perfect because, you know, we'd partied so hard.
Right.
There's so many people there
right.
and just partied so hard.
And so the funny thing is, like, you were like essentially a no name going mm-hmm. in there. And a lot of people from that we knew were no names, but we were like this young class that was like going to represent. And then, there were like old favorites there. Like Swan was clearly the favorite to win. And uh-huh. then that day you just
quote unquote, like got robbed against Rhymefest the year before.
Right.
He had the MTV battle.
Right, he had been on MTV.
Yeah.
And so you go up there and you're just like this fucking, I don't know, like shot in the dark kid that just like goes and takes over the whole shit. Caught the Holy Ghost that day. Do you remember that day? Or?
Yeah, it was like the most surreal thing. Like, prior to that, I was working at the same aluminum extrusion plant that as I dropped out of high school, my senior year, actually,
just
was
to
like,
pursue
I'm
the
traveling
rap,
to Cal. It was like when I started traveling to Cal, and I was like, you know what? I was having all these problems, like academically. I could have probably if I just really buckled down, but I was just on my like rebellious, like whatever. I know all this already. I don't care.
Right.
And then it was like a few like relationship things, and I was just like, you know what? I'm out. And then that's when I started heavily traveling to Cali, and I was just like, I'm doing this. And then so I got a job at the same aluminum extrusion plant. And before I even got a job, I'm like, hey, I might have to travel. And then my supervisor's like, all right, no, I respect it. And then he gave me time off to go to Scribble because my dude DJ was like, I'll buy us tickets if we both go. I'll buy your ticket. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, I can't pass that up. So I get accepted to get in the prelims by
Kevin Beecham.
You had to send like footage and stuff.
Right.
So I got like footage from the battle I won in Portland. And then I had like Philip Drummond send me to like get this stuff from Santa Barbara and whatever else. And I sent it in. And he was like, all right, you're in the preliminary battle. Because at that time, I think it was like, you know, 16 plus
dudes,
selected.
Right. They would choose like 14 guys in advance, then leave two spots from the prelims or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. And then, so I got accepted in the prelims and, you know, the prelims ended up being so I get the time off, and then my boss, like 2 days before I fly out, tickets are already bought, everything. Yeah. 2 days before I left, my boss was like, hey, there's people with more seniority that need the time off, you can't go. And I was like, I already bought plane tickets, like, yeah, you cleared me, you know. And yeah, he's like, well, if you go, you won't have a job when you get back. And this is like right before I clocked out, and I remember just like thinking in my head for a sec, and I'm like, all right, like, have my check when I get back, you know? And I was like, I remember at that point being like, this is what I'm doing. Yeah. I already gave up school, you know, fuck this job. I was like working, I was literally working 6 days a week, 10 hour shifts, fresh out of high school. I was like 18 doing 60 hours a week, wow, of like lifting heavy metal, and like I became Sawboss, and was just like cutting it. It was like Eminem and 8 Mile, like stamping license plates, you know, like 18.
He said, oh, you're not going to have a job when you come back. And you said, well, there's vomit on my shirt already, mom's spaghetti.
Yeah, I think that was my word for word response. So I end up going, and prelims same day. And I battled Franco in the final four in the prelims moved on. Yeah. So I made it to the semifinals, and like I battled Jay Jack, I think like first round, which was weird because you know, we're both came
dude,
out
I saw him in
gold.
Hollywood years later, like with a bunch of fucking porn chicks on Hollywood Boulevard. Like he was like the man. I don't know what happened.
You know, he had that glow in his eye. Yeah. He was going to do something always.
It was crazy. But anyways,
So I battled someone else, this guy Ubiquitous, and then the semifinals.
Oh, yeah, Ubiquitous. They went on to, they're pretty big now.
Yeah.
Because him and his other homie are signed to Strange Music.
Are they?
Yeah. What is his group's name? I can't remember, but him, Yubi, and whoever, and his
crazy
rap partner, they're signed to Strange.
Yeah, bars even back then, you know, it was just like a certain thing. But I battled him, and then semifinals came around, and I battled Franco.
Yeah.
And at that point, they had said final four, move on to the main stage. And so at that point, me and Franco both talked right before we went on, and we're like, we don't even need to battle. We can just cipher. And I remember specifically, I go first, and I'm like so juiced at this point. I'm off like a Red Bull, maybe two. And I'm like, I made it to the main stage. Yeah. Like all I wanted to do, I looked up the Scribble Jam so much. All I wanted to do was make it to the main stage.
Yeah.
That like meant everything to me. And so I'm like, all right, yeah, we can. And I like just, you know, bullshit around and like freestyle a little bit. And then like it wasn't getting much reaction. Franco immediately just starts bodying
me. Yeah, he's like,
we'll freestyle. And then he just starts bodying me. And I'm like, I'm looking at him like, I thought we was. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm like, I don't even care. And he ended up beating me.
Yeah.
I'm like, cool. But I still made it to the main stage.
He's an interesting character that way. Oh, a bit of a poor sport.
I got a handful of Franco stories.
I have crazy Franco stories too. Where is Franco now?
You know, I'm not. He's a career man.
Oh, okay.
We'll say that. I know he's doing good.
I haven't seen him in years and years.
Yeah, he knows how to get it. So yeah. Funny Franco story. So anyways, then first round I battle quote unquote Johnny Blaze, but it wasn't Johnny Blaze. He like no showed, and Red Simpkins from Orlando, like Cap Callis's homie, just was like, all right, I'll go up as Johnny Blaze or whatever. And so I battle him first round. But and like, remember in the freestyle days, if you used to watch who battled before and after you and how the brackets broke down, you used to be able to predict who you were going to battle.
So you could have like some bars ready?
Yeah. Like try to start thinking of stuff before you battle. So the last two battles were Swan versus somebody and me versus Johnny Blaze.
Yeah.
In that first round on the main stage. So I beat Johnny Blaze. That was like the battle. Like people always quote to me. I was like, something about your little sister, give her a nipple twister. A scissor kicker,
right.
And like it was just like the energy. I was off like three Red Bulls by this point, and I'm like, the energy was, it was all adrenaline plus the bull nut from the Red Bull, you know what I mean? So like no one, it was like that real fresh coast style that we had developed of just like stacking on rhymes where you know, if you go to like the idea, the swan, the gin era is real like set up punch. But like what I had learned from the Fresh Coast and competing, and you know, from the No Can Do's, the Francos and everything, was like just stacking rhymes on and still punching the same, yeah, but just stacking the rhymes.
Well, you would
on,
use
you, know?
You would use polysyllabic rhyme schemes in triplets. Like it would be like your setup would have, you would start with the triplet, or you would start with the polysyllabic rhyme scheme, and then you would have it so it'd be like, ah, fuck, I wish I can explain it in my head,
yeah,
but
yeah,
I can't,
yeah,
say
yeah.
it like without, yeah, writing it down, like ABAB,
yeah,
da,
yeah,
da, da,
yeah,
da, da, ABAB. But you would like rhyme right at the beginning, and then you rhyme at the end of the bar, and then you would rhyme in the middle of the next bar and at the end of that bar. So yeah, you have a bunch of rhyme schemes right in the middle.
Yeah.
And so, and like that, I feel like you kind of developed that, and that became like, but that became the blueprint for what everybody did for like 4 years after, yeah, that, at least, you, yeah, know what I mean? And yeah, like you and Pete, Thesaurus, like really had that style mastered. And then everybody from fucking Florida and wherever, New York, like everybody that was battle rapping started doing that.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, this is disgusting. Cause like, yeah, this is these guys' bad style that like, yeah, all these people are bastardizing.
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah. It like, it evolved from like the big influence on me from Franco and No Can Do, you know, and just an XI and the Fresh Coast style in general was like, not just doing setup punch. It was like, you know, the setup was damn near a punch in itself, yeah, but then there, instead of just being two rhymes every two bars, it was like three or four,
right,
and that was how it started in Scribble Jam. And then, you know, of course, in and then it evolved with me and Thesaurus in the two on twos later. But so all that to say, in Scribble Jam,
no one had ever heard it before.
Yeah, and it was like this avalanche of like rhymes, and not like people, I think it really took people off guard, combined with like this young cat with all this energy, you know,
right,
and like adrenaline was just like overflowing out of me to even make, like I told myself that day, if I make it to the main stage, that's all I want to do. Once I made it to the main stage, I'm like, I just want to make the DVD.
Yeah.
This is like what I grew up on. If I make the DVD, I'm immortalized in hip hop.
Right.
You know, I really felt like I go down in history forever if I make it on the DVD.
Right.
So my first round I win, and then I realized I'm battling Swan. So rewind, less than a year before this, we watched me, my, you know, it's one of those things where we went to my buddy Joel's house, watched 03 DVD. Got into a big argument with my buddy DJ, who happened to be at Scribble when I went, who I went with. And I got into a big argument with him because we watched it, and Swan was like, everything was a punch, you know? I mean, it was set up punch, but there was no filler.
Right.
And, he was amazing, and I remember being like, man, I'll beat him. Like, after we watched 03, everyone was like, Swan should have won. I was like, man, I'll battle him. And I remember my buddy DJ, who's like my biggest advocate, being like, look, man, you're really good. I don't think you could ever beat Swan.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, what? And I remember looking at him hella crazy, and I'm like,
The Napoleon complex kicks in.
Yes. So then, for real. And so then, fast forward, I'm like, I'm about to battle Swan.
Yeah.
You know, like in between rounds in 04, I'm like, I'm about to battle. And I look out in the crowd, and I see DJ in like the second row, and he looks at me and he yells something. I'm like, what? And I just see him mouth, you're battling Swan. Like, he's like yelling it. And I'm like,
shit.
And I could look at him, I go, I know. And so like immediately my gears are turning.
In the biopic of your fucking life, that would be the moment where like, dun, 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 dun,
it was definitely montage.
Yeah,
it was definitely montage material.
You flash back and see the life before your eyes.
Because in my head, I'm like, Swan has all this momentum. I'm battling him, which means I'm making the DVD.
Right. And that was like the second to last round, or was
that? No, that was the second round.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was the second round.
Yeah, yeah.
I battled five people on the main stage.
And you end up winning that battle. And I remember being in the crowd watching that. And it was like, when that happened, all of us were going so apeshit, but like the crowd just banged.
Yeah. The judges came and like picked me up
from that point, it was yours to lose.
Yeah.
And like the Mac Lethal battle in the final around, it almost seemed like a gimme for you, which is, it's so funny to see where everyone's at now, because to put that in perspective, in 2004 you battle Mac Lethal in the final round of Scribble Jam, and it's crazy where careers have gone, because now you are like essentially a career battle rapper, like you, like that I would imagine that's like what pays the bills, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
that and
other stuff. And so, but I mean, like, And Mac Lethal now is like a YouTube sensation that's like goes viral for fucking pancake raps and everything else. Yeah. You know, like everyone's found their little niche with the music, even though that was a pivotal year, I think, because that was the year that things were changing, and it was no longer like winning Scribble Jam doesn't mean you're going to be a touring musician necessarily. It means that now you just have a name and you got to figure out how to internet hustle your way through the fucking world. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I remember No Can Do called me after the whole thing and was like, we had a relationship, but he called me after that and was like, we were at the Budget Host. And
well,
was
you
like,
know who told him that you won?
Woohoo.
I had lost my voice and I went, but when you won, I was like, oh my God, we're all going to make it. Like we've done it. I was literally having like a Mama We Made It moment. Like, oh my God, the whole crew is on, you know, I was like, damn. Cause that's the thing is like the way that I found out about so much rap was through Scribble Jam. Like I found out about Sage Francis and
too.
The way that I found out about fucking Slug was through battle raps. Cause I saw Idea and then I heard about the Rhyme Sarah shit. And then I heard about Brother Ali. And then that's how I found out about Slug. And so even though I didn't know Slug as a battle rapper, I was like, oh shit, now that all the homies are on, like, they're gonna see the songs that I've done with them, and then and I was like, everybody's gonna be on.
Yeah.
And so I called James right after the battle, and I was like, hey man, like, you'll never believe, because that's how my voice sounded. I was like, you'll never believe who won. And he's like, who? And I was like, Greg won. And he's like, oh shit. And
then he called me later, and I was like,
I made it. Yeah.
I like fell asleep. This sounds like Magus made up, but I literally, like, we drank till
Do you remember who you slept with that night? We slept in a bed together that night. Pause. I crashed at the Budget Hotel and I just fell asleep on a bed, and then you had drank like however the fuck much you drank a shitload that night. Yeah. And you ended up just crashing on the bed next to me, and we didn't cuddle or nothing. Well, you're lost. But yeah, I woke up and I went,
prior to that, I woke up probably right before I crawled in the bed. Yeah. I woke up sitting in a chair in the same hotel room, like cradling the Scribble Jam trophy. Like, I woke up and I was just like cradling like a newborn little baby.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. And
yeah,
I
was like, no, it was on that night.
It was probably like, noon when I probably crawled in. Right. Like, it went till the light came out. For
It was crazy. Yeah. That was a fun time. And so after Scribble, you go back to Oregon and you don't have a job waiting for you.
Right.
And do you kind of realize like, oh shit, I got to make this rap shit work? Because the thing is that battle rapping as a monetary thing wasn't real back then.
Yeah.
Now it is. It wasn't then.
Right.
Right. So what were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was definitely a realization like, okay, now what?
Right.
You know, because even at that time, competing at, you know, the highest level was always a gamble because there was no guarantees back then. You know, like now there's guarantees. At that time, it was whoever won.
Right. It was like, sure, a battle might have a $5,000 prize, but only the winner gets that.
Yeah.
And then to a point, you guys started like colluding together to like, okay, look, if we make it to the final round, we're split it regardless or whatever. Yeah, like, so that became a little bit more safety. But now people make 5-10 G's for one battle.
Right.
Right. No matter what, you know? Yeah, guarantee. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a moment of realization, and I had to, pull resources and do other things and whatever. But, that was definitely a catalyst to be able to open up other opportunities, you know, that I tried to utilize as much as possible. So from traveling to shows, guarantees, a little more, you know, I definitely seen, when I dropped my first record, the effects of the name Built in Battle Rap, but it wasn't something that was especially at that time, a realistic sole income to be able to support, you know, independent living.
Right, totally. Yeah. So what do you do when you get home?
So when I get home, 01, basically, or no, 04, sorry, 04, there was like a year and a half of pretty much just degeneracy. You know, party. I think there's some battles here and there. There's like the King of Portland battle 05, whatever. And Now, I traveled out to like for like spin the mic or something. And you know, there was 1,000 here, 500 there, 1,000 there. But it was a real like up in the air time where I like went back home and or I was staying at home. And then 06 was the World Rap Championships, which I was like, this is I have to do this.
How did 05 feel? I've never gotten to ask you about this, but 05, when we go back to Scribble Jam, you were the favorite, clearly. And what happens? Was it first or second round? Like, there was a big upset.
Yeah, it was like second round. I lost to H-Bomb.
Oh, yeah, right. Another Portland dude, right?
Seattle.
Oh,
but
Seattle.
Yeah, I had lost him. And I'm like 0 for 2 against H-Bomb at this point. He got me.
Was that like a fucking... For me, losses seem devastating, and I'm sure get blown up in your... Or like, I'm sure they're not as big of a deal in your head, but that seemed like... To me, I was like, oh, man, this is a fucking downer. How was it?
Nah, yeah, it sucked. It definitely sucked. But at that time, like, the Source was on a run. I was like, God, I was like, he's got to win, you know?
Oh, right.
And then when I watched, like, Justice do what he did, you know, maybe it was, like, the ego or, like, maybe it was, like, a consolation prize for me to be like, he just out-Illmac'd
year. He totally did.
It was the same
Illmac pattern. It was
the same dynamic. Yeah. And so, like, in my head, I was, like, trying to console myself with the fact that, like, yeah, but the guy who won just did what I did last year.
Right.
Just
it was
a little
just
bit better
moment.
Than me. I'm
right.
Like, and but that's no shade. Like, that was just like the real thoughts that I had at that time. But he performed that a whole new, like, he stepped it up.
You ever go back and watch those kind of battles and just are like embarrassed by how far you've come since then? Or like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because at the time watching them, I was going, this is the fucking pinnacle of battle rap. Yeah. This is so amazing. And now I go back and I go, Jesus Christ. Like, everybody sucked back then.
Right, right.
So funny.
No, I definitely do.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, and I'm like, okay, it's come a long way.
Yeah.
You know?
I still keep in contact with Justice's homie that he flew out with, this dude, Steve.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I met him at that Scribble Jam and we're still homies to this day, even out in Australia.
That's dope.
Yeah, yeah. Fun times. Okay, so. Yeah, the World Rap Championships start in 06, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the precursor to everything that's happened with modern, I guess, battle rapping.
Yeah.
Even though it had been going on a long time with smack battles and stuff like that as far as acapellas go.
Yeah.
How did you initially feel about acapella battle rapping?
You know, I think there was like this Fresh Coast / freestyle kind of hegemony that I had grown up with, like, oh, you know, like, that ain't freestyle, like, that's mixtape verses.
Right.
But I watched them, like, it was definitely like I was a fan, and I also just kind of tried to be like, yeah, but our shit's freestyle, you know?
Right.
Like, it was like that young, like, yeah, I like commercial rap, but underground, you
right,
know, it's
right.
like that type of
right.
dynamic. And, so the 2-on-2s, we get contacted for it. And like us, you know, prior to this, me and the Source had teamed up once for Mind Games. We lost to Kallus and Rockus in the finals. Highlighted that as I'm wearing an Analog hoodie. And, Kallus says, that don't say, what's it? Yeah, he says that hoodie don't say Analog, it says Anal, OG.
Like, I remember that.
That was like what Body does.
You know what's funny is that the next year, I think in 06, wait, no, maybe.
So that was like 05, I think.
Maybe in 06, yeah. Bo-Rat and I teamed up on Mind Games and we lost to Kallus and Ruckus.
Yeah.
And they got, and we almost had, but they got us with some, like, I think Ruckus called me like Stewie from Family Guy or something, and the crowd seemed to react to that pretty heavy. But
that was all you had to do, is like compare people to
Tucson,
like,
favorites.
Silly.
They loved their Arizona kids and the home field advantage. Anyway,
so we had teamed up already once, and then Harry from Jump Off reached out to us like, hey, this battle, I think it was $10,000 prize, you should do the 2-on-2s. Where was the first one? The first one was in New York. So he's like, you know, we'll fly you out, put you up, just do the 2-on-2s. So we're like, all right, I hit the Source. He's like, let's do it. Nothing more to be said. Let's go get this $10,000. And, you know, we went out there, small Manhattan apartment we shared. And, you know, that was actually the most grueling, even though Scribble Jam like was just such a long process and is one on one. To this day, I maintain that the two on two experiences were the most grueling battle rap experiences that I've ever had. Like, it was like just 12 hours straight battling every team twice, nothing but rap. Yeah,
it was
rap,
a lot.
Rap,
and it was a lot. And you could see as you watched them progress, like the fatigue.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The first battles are definitely like better than the last battles. Yeah. To a certain extent.
It's battling from like 12 to 12.
You just run out of words at a certain point.
What else do you want me to say? Right. I already battled this team. It was like three rounds of like long rounds at that time.
Yeah.
What was long rounds? And, you know, we just went in there and initially what we said was, you know, we can't go wrong if we just spit four bars each.
Yeah.
That's it. And then we have time to think of what we're going to say next. We'll freestyle. We'll go in with, you know, some punchlines, but at that time we didn't have no setups, no nothing. We're like, we'll just go in like, well, I don't know, you know, I'll have a couple here, a couple there, and everything else will just freestyle off each other. And like, me and him had a pretty good dynamic as friends of, you know, joking, you know, like we could just go off each other on long-winded jokes forever. And I think that heavily played into our dynamic as a team.
Right.
So, you know, we get there, we battle, and we just followed our formula of like four bars each, four
and
bars
that became
each coming
the
off.
Blueprint for like the next 5 years, it feels like. Yeah. Like the way that you guys were rhyming during those just became like, that's what battle rap sound
prior
like.
Prior to that, it was like the era of like setup punch of like, you know, yo, something is like the nonsensical setup, like something talk whack.
Yeah.
Yo, everything you talk's whack.
Yeah.
You look like blank on crack.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And that was like the quintessence. That was like, oh, he does kind of look like that person if they had a serious addiction that we shouldn't laugh at.
Yeah.
So then like what we did, and it was really like the source, I think that cultivated it, and then us doing it in the two on twos just put it on a bigger level, was rather than just saying that, it was like adding the extra rhyme.
Right.
So like, I remember a bunch of thesaurus examples of before we even teamed up, where he was like, for the World Rap Championships, where he was like, you know, something, I'm liver, you look like Mekhi Phifer if he stuck his face in five diapers. So it was like adding the extra rhyme after the comparison.
Right.
And like, that was kind of our thing. So it wasn't just saying the thing, it was like adding an extra layer, and that became kind of the blueprint for Grind Time after that, even, you know.
So speaking of Grind Time, did you think when those things were starting that battle leagues would be a feasible thing or as big of a thing as they are now?
No, I had no idea where it was going. It's kind of by the seat of my pants, like previous to like right before, cause I like got involved with Grind Time, like had Grind Time Northwest. And right prior to that, like what I was doing, I was throwing my own shows in Portland and filming battles a cappella.
Right.
Just cause I'm like, seeing what Jump Off did, I'm like, I'm doing it myself. I wasn't really that aware of Grind Time. And then Lush reached out to me like, you should just join. And
I
then
almost
kind of
feel like you were a late adopter to the league thing, because you were kind of a cut above a lot of the dudes that were doing it already. Like, you were the one who they had kind of, you had kind of fathered their style.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think like when you first battled in the leagues, it was kind of a bigger deal, wasn't it?
Yeah. Cause my first battle was against Diz, you know, there'd already been several Grind Time events, even West Coast, and, you know, Diz had beat the Source.
Right.
I battled Diz and Madness the same day. My first event.
Oh, that's right. Battle of the Bay 2 or 3 or something.
I think it was 3.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely like came to the game a little late with Grind Time, but then like joined as also a president or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I would say at this point now you've battled in a bunch of different leagues and like with the history that you have and just how you've been performing lately, like you're clearly a well-known battle rapper. I think most people from every league would say you're like a top 10, top 20, whatever, dude. I don't know the, I don't really follow battling that much anymore. It's become too,
top one.
It's become too many. Yeah, there you go. You're the best battler that's ever lived
ever.
Or anything. Have you battled in URL yet? Oh shit, he's got his King of the Dot chain on. I didn't know. Oh yeah, you're the King of the Dot champ right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's right.
I haven't battled on URL, no.
Will you?
Yeah, I mean,
want to?
Yes.
Who do you want to battle in URL?
I don't care.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want it to be official.
Why haven't you yet?
There was like one opportunity, and after I gave my, this is like 2012, and I gave my price and then never heard back. So I might have yeah. priced myself out of the game at that point.
Yeah.
But it'll happen. Because my goal at this point is I will be, before I like hang my battle gloves up,
yeah.
I will be the great, you know, I will be the greatest of all time. I'm going to do that.
That's good. That's a good attitude to have. And I like yeah. that. Maybe, I mean, you just lit a fire under my ass where I'm like, I got to go be the greatest at something.
No, not really. It's true.
Here's the thing. When we were coming up and we were kids, I felt like the battle scene was clicky in that we had our, what became known as the Fresh Coast thing.
Yeah.
We were all friends and we would look at people. I remember seeing Iron Solomon at Scribble Jam one time and just being like, psst. I was like, damn, this kid's dope, but like, fuck him. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
He's like some New York guy. And like, look how he's dressed. Like, what is this? Like being like, cause I wanted to like, I was like sticking up for my home team.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Not totally,
that dude's like an amazing battle rapper.
Yeah.
And so is battle rap still kind of clicky like that, where it's like you run with this certain league. And so like, oh, you know what? When me and Lux see each other, we don't talk or anything like that.
I think it's to a certain extent, but it's super lightweight just because same thing with music. But I think the internet and awareness of everything has broken a lot of that down to
yeah.
where like I feel familiar with this artist that's never came to my town, but
right.
I've seen all his music video. It's the same thing with like battle rappers where, you know, I've met several East Coast cats, Midwest, you know, from Big T to the Arsenal, even people I battle who, when we go to events, like we kick it, we drink
yeah.
beforehand and it's
yeah.
And it's not as much division just because, you know, those cliques were developed out of like, I have relationships with them. Now it's like developed out of awareness and access.
Right.
It's always been about access.
Well, and everybody,
you know,
pays so much attention to what everyone's doing.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys have seen this very well documented, you
right.
know, everything is content. So life is good.
Yeah, life, you know, I'm grateful. The universe rewards gratitude.
Yeah, it seems like it all worked out. You're living off your passions.
Yes.
Right?
It's true.
That's all you can ask for, man.
It really is.
What's next for you?
I just been really pushing the music and like battle rap. Yeah, I love battle rap. Music's always been my first love. Like
yeah.
we covered, you know, I was recording and making music and I had passion before, you know, for it long before battle
right.
rap. And that's my first love. Like, it's always been my first love. Writing, making music's been so that's like what I've been pursuing. Me and Only One, myself and Only One just dropped the album called Only a Nil.
Okay.
You know, it's on iTunes.
When did it drop?
September 18th.
Okay, so yeah, it just came out.
Yeah, yeah. We just got finished doing a tour.
You guys were from Sand People together. Is the
yeah.
Sand People still together?
We're all homies. We all kick it. Like, we're not actively making music as a collective.
Right.
There's like a myth of an album that
right.
like has just been on hard drives that I don't have access
right,
to, but
right, right.
like that we started a few years
yeah.
ago and we've like, you know, been adding to, but overall we all support and do tours with each other.
Oh,
like
cool.
last summer, me, Gold, Sape, Spark, you know, 4/10 out of
cool.
the crew toured. This last tour we did is 4/10 of us, myself, or Gold, and then a homie that's not in the crew, Mike Bogan, and then me, Only One, and Spark all just did a tour.
Cool.
DJ Spark. So we're all actively, like, you know, supporting each other's music career. It's just more of like subgroups and,
yeah.
and solo acts.
Right,
and,
of course.
And still collaborating actively.
Right.
But yeah, Only a Nil. You know, we got Hippie Sabotage and Chase
right.
on all the production.
Yeah, we just had Sat on.
Oh yeah,
yeah. They produced his record, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
yeah.
It's like all like, you know, even going back to the battle shit, it's like all family still.
Yeah.
And we're still intersecting paths. Like
right.
Sat's about to be on a few shows we're doing this month. Me,
nice.
Only Sat and Chase
dope.
Are doing a little string of shows.
Cool, man.
But yeah, just pushing that.
Where can the people find you online?
Just at Illmaculate on Twitter. I'm actively protesting Facebook because they want me to upload like an ID and all this like info of me because I was using my like artist name like Ill Space Maculate
right.
so they're like trying. I'm like, man, y'all block all my views anyway.
Yeah,
like I
yeah.
got like five, I got the max amount of friends
right.
quote unquote, and like I see my stuff gets like 10 likes
right.
because it doesn't reach, and I'm
right.
like, fuck Facebook. But yeah, Twitter, on Instagram, just at Illmaculate
right.
SP.
And if you guys, and then if you guys want to find him, he's very easy to find on YouTube as well. Just search Illmaculate, spelled how it sounds. Right. And there are hours upon hours of battles. And if you are not a battle rap fan, be very careful, because you will get sucked into a K-hole and maybe you'll become a fan. And if you are a battle rap fan, thank you for tuning in. And yeah, hopefully you guys learned something about my friend Greg that you didn't know before, because I sure did as well.
Thank you.
So with that being said, my name is Lee. Some of you guys know me as Intuition, and you can find me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can find my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, based with two S's. You can find us as a unit at Kinda Neat, youtube.com/KindaNeat, where you're going to see Illmaculate perform. And everything is wrapped up in a pretty package at KindaNeat.net. Remember to download the podcast app, search for Kinda Neat, and subscribe. And I think that's all my spiel. And if you're still listening, thank you so much. Like I said, I'm Lee. That was Illmaculate, and this was Kinda Neat.
Thank you.